For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
It's good to see you all. Thanks for being here and always supporting my practice. Special thanks to Taigen for giving me this opportunity to talk. It's always a good challenge for me. Taigen also says that I can have about 2 to 3 hours, so if anyone has to go to the washroom, they can do that right now. Just kidding. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about my practice and what I've been sort of thinking about lately, and just share those things with you. A lot of questions, exploring sort of what vulnerability means to me lately, and community, and sort of the theme of taking care of whatever's in front of us. So I'm hoping that this will be encouraging for your practice and both comforting and challenging at the same time. But I do want to start with some haikus about summer, since we just got gifted with a new season. So just do a couple basho haikus for you all. The temple bell stops, but the sound keeps coming out of the flowers. Along the mountain road, somehow it tugs at my heart, a wild violet. Long conversations beside blooming irises, joys of life on the road. The lilies, the stems, just as they are. The flowers, just as they are. So at the beginning of each season, I have a tradition of reading a little bit about each season, sort of the metaphor of seasons and our lives, with some of my former housemates, we call each other. So I thought I'd share a little bit with that with you guys too. And I think there's a lot in here too that hoping maybe people will want to talk about after this very brief talk. So I'll just shorten it a little bit for you. Nature normally takes us through a reliable cycle of scarcity and abundance in which times of deprivation foreshadow an eventual return to the bountiful fields. This fact of nature is in sharp contrast to human nature, which seems to regard perpetual scarcity as a law of life. Daily, I am astonished at how readily I believe that something I need is in short supply. If I hoard possessions, it is because I believe that there are not enough to go around. If I struggle with others over power, it is because I believe that power is limited. If I become jealous in relationships, it is because I believe that when you get too much love, I will be shortchanged. The irony, often tragic, is that embracing the scarcity assumption, we create the very scarcities we fear. If I hoard material goods, others will have too little and I will never have enough. If I fight my way up the ladder of power, others will be defeated and I will never feel secure. If I get jealous of someone I love, I'm likely to drive that person away. We create scarcity by fearfully accepting it as law and by competing with others for resources as if we were stranded in the Sahara at the last oasis. In the human world, abundance does not happen automatically. It is created when we have the sense to choose community, to come together to celebrate our common store. Whether the scarce resource is money or love or power or words, the true law of life is that we generate more of whatever seems scarce by trusting its supply and passing it around. Authentic abundance does not lie in secured stockpiles of food or cash or influence or affection, but in belonging to a community where we can give those goods to others who need them and receive them from others when we are in need. Here is a summertime truth. Abundance is a communal act, the joint creation of an incredibly complex ecology in which each part functions on behalf of the whole and in return is sustained by the whole. Community doesn't just create abundance, community is abundance. If we could learn that equation from the world of nature, the human world might be transformed. I think I forgot to mention that that was Parker Palmer. So, I think there's a lot to unpack there, but I'm going to let you do that in your heads mostly. But I will comment a little bit. I think this like I said, I've been reading this for many years, and every summer it kind of has a different meaning for me. But this summer, it resonates a lot with me. I feel like I'm hoarding a lot of things. I feel like I'm feeling really jealous and feeling like there's not enough to go around. And I don't exactly know where that's coming from. I've been thinking about that a lot, but I can relate to that in a lot of ways. But then I remember the communities in my life, the many, many communities in my life. And I think about the Sangha here and, you know, looking around the room at all the little things that we do that are actually really, really big. I mean, thank you, Brian, for ringing the bell, because otherwise we'd still be sitting in silence. Thank you for taking care of that and doing that. Thank you, Hakusho, for the chance, for leading that in such a wholehearted way. And I can go around the room and thank everyone for all the things that they do to make this community work. We all do this together, and I feel so grateful for that. And I think it's easy to forget how abundant community can be. So I really like this reading about summer. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some sort of mantras and koans that I've taken upon myself lately to study and to just sit with. And I feel like they really teach me to be a little bit more open and vulnerable. I've been sort of thinking about the idea of sort of taking care of everything that's in front of me. I'm really thinking through what that means. And I feel like just thinking through taking care of this Zafu and Zabutan and everything that's in front of me makes me feel more vulnerable. I feel like Zazen really softens me and opens me up to so many things and to see things in a different light. So all these koans that I'll briefly talk about have to do with taking care of so many things, everything that's in front of me and in front of us. One, we're going to chant this in a little while, but beings are numberless, I vow to free them. I sort of see that lately as vowing to know them, to get to know them, to find ways to take care of them. I think it was Shohaku Akamaru that said that we need to wake up to the reality that from the beginning we are one with all beings. And sort of this really powerful and beautiful thing of how can I take care of everything and everyone? What does that look like? So I've been sort of sitting with that and practicing with that. Even sort of the smallest of things, even, you know, as I was walking over here, a bug flew on me. How do I take care of that, you know, that bug? And how do I take care of the difficult situations that go on? But I find that it's really hard sometimes. This reality is hard. It's difficult to trust and to be open to taking care of other people. I think there's, like I said, there's a vulnerability in that. There's a lot of possibility for being rejected and being hurt. And sometimes I just want to close myself off and go sit in my apartment in solitude. It's just easy sometimes to do that. It's really nice. So I constantly have to ask myself, how do I take care of myself while also taking care of others? And I think another piece to that comes up. I've been looking a little bit at the Dogen's instructions for the cook. I try to revisit that every once in a while, and I think the three minds that he talks about, the parental mind, is very meaningful to me in my life. I feel like I spend a lot of time trying to, in a more conventional way, take care of others, especially in my day-to-day work, trying to take care of people and trying to take care of everything that is coming at me. There's a lot going on. There's I work at a food pantry, so there's constantly 17 things going on, and always a surprise at what's coming through the door, what food is coming through the door. Is how can we make this food sort of presentable and the best state we can make it, so that it's comforting to people, and how can we treat people with dignity in every interaction that we have. And I think also that's really hard, but I like exploring it through some of these teachings and challenging myself because I forget sometimes to take care of people. Sometimes I'm really harsh. Sometimes I'm really brief with people, and they annoy me. And I'm just like, stop talking to me. Why are you talking to me right now? I'm stressed out. Can you tell I'm stressed out? So I think there's also, it's much harder to take care of things that are difficult. I have a sort of difficult situation with my sister-in-law right now. She's challenging me very much. She has a very rigid belief system and is trying to sort of change the way I am. She believes that I can be different. And I think my response to that is, how do I let other people take care of me in that situation? So how do I let friends and family take care of me? How do I let that go of that maybe me taking care of me is being open to others taking care of me, and sort of receiving that, receiving the care of others. It's a very lovely thing. Also, I feel like I've been thinking about the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhas and ancestors. Now we have it, preserve it well, take care of it. How can we take care of the Dharma? How can I take care of everything in front of me? And how do I take care of the world? How do I take care of people that are the most vulnerable? Of things that are right in front of me at every moment. And it's I think, interesting to see, again, the theme of how do I take care of other while also taking care of myself. And I think I've more seeing the act of taking care of myself as an act of resistance in some ways, and how it's easy for me to forget about myself throughout all this and to want to help other people and support other people and take care of other people. And then I remember I read recently, I think it was in Lion's Roar magazine, Norman Fisher had this really lovely quote. He said, caring for others isn't guilt-ridden self-sacrifice. It is a joyful extension of identity. And I see that more and more with my practice. And I see that the most with my niece. I have a wonderful, wonderful 2-year-old niece who is just a joy and a gift. She lives about a mile from me, and I read Dogen to her sometimes and teaching her some Sanskrit words. She knows how to say bodhisattva, so don't worry. And every day when I think about what I'm grateful for, she's the first thing that comes to my mind. And I think about the joy in that. And there's a lot of difficulty in that, too. When she was born, she had a very difficult birth. She had a lot of seizures, and no one really knew what was going on. And at that same time, and the mother of an ex-girlfriend of mine passed away. So it was just like dealing with birth and death in this really complex way, in this really simultaneously difficult teaching, I think. And I really wanted to control everything. I didn't want to take care of anything. I didn't want to take care of my grief or anyone else's grief. And I didn't know how to take care of it. There's so much uncertainty, and it was really scary. I didn't really know how to sort of be intimate with what was going on. I sort of just closed off. And I think that there's sort of a lot. There's a lot going on for all of us. And I think it feels overwhelming sometimes for me. So I try to remember that it's not just me here. And there's other things going on. There's a lot of really horrible things going on in the world. So much violence. I could talk a long time about all the things that are really difficult to see and violent. And I think with the Orlando massacre, that's certainly on my mind. And the violence of and hate of Islamophobia that comes out of that, and the killing of so many black bodies in this country. And I think I don't really know how to respond to that. I don't know how to take care of that. And I really struggle with that. How do I confront how I look at race? How do I confront my silence? I just finished a book called The Way of Tenderness by Zenzu Earthlin Manuel. And she has this really, I think, powerful quote. She says, "We all share the same oneness. We are all in the same garden, but in different parts of it. Some plants need light and some need shade. Some are dying and some are not. We are in different parts of the garden because it is necessary." And I think for me, I have to sort of give up these fears and not let them get in the way of messing up or doing things the wrong way or saying things that I don't think are, you know, appropriate to say or care about what other people think of me, and sort of give up this comfort that I have. I think this another koan that I've been sitting with is from chapter 16 of the Lotus Sutra, give up holding back from your life. And I think that's what I'm trying to bring up, is just to stop being afraid of all these silly things that I'm afraid of, and to have conversations. And I think I'm thinking more deeply about that. And I don't think I realize how powerful my silence can be. So I'm exploring that and thinking about how I'm buying into all of that silence and the complacency. So I guess some of the questions that I'm asking right now are, how can we take care of others, ourselves, the world in new ways? And how can we respond to the cries of the world? And how can we be open to learn and open to seeing others beyond our limited ideas? So I'm hoping that something resonated with you guys and we can have a little conversation. I'd be interested in that. So thank you all for your attention.
Thank you very much, Katie, for raising our situation together. Communal garden. Does anyone have responses, comments, questions, sharings?
Yeah, there's every season.
How has reading that changed, especially the part about scarcity and abundance after you've been working on the food pantry?
Well, that's a good question. I appreciate that. I think working in a pantry, you see a lot of abundance because people waste a lot of food. So, my job is to bring donations into the pantry. And I think there's so much I can say about, like, capitalism, but I'll stop with that. I won't say that. I think people are just sharing their excess with the pantry, and they're not sharing actually, it doesn't feel like sharing to me. It just feels like, I need to get rid of this, so come take it away from me. Which is a very pessimistic view, and I apologize that I've come to this point, but it is what it is. So I think I see that there's abundance, but I can't quite figure out how to be in relationship with that, how to have conversations about that, and how to actually reap the benefits of that abundance and share that abundance with people that have to choose between paying rent this month and getting food for their household. I don't know if that answered the question, but... Hey, Brian.
That quote that you read from about caring for another as an extension of oneself, what was that part?
Yeah, I'm happy to read. So it's a Norman Fisher quote. "Caring for others isn't guilt-ridden self-sacrifice. It is a joyful extension of identity."
When you were just talking about the food pantry, I've been around food pantries and I know how complicated it can be in terms of the pandemics. And one of the things that I've seen is the subtle ways in which sometimes charity becomes a way to reinforce separateness. I'm giving you out of my abundance, and you're needy, so I'm going to help you, and I'm wonderful for doing so. And that's cynical, too. But what that quote suggests to me is that true helping is not really helping from this separate position of superiority, because I've got something to give you and you need it, but really an extension of self. Of, we're here together, we're in this together, and we share.
Exactly.
Do you see that? I mean, is that part of the dynamic of food pantry in terms of getting to that place for you?
I see it with our volunteers. I think there's a lot of people that live in the community that just care about people and want to be in relationship with other people. I sort of see it as like, I want my bike shop to keep existing, because if Amazon puts it out of business, then I don't know how to get my bike fixed, because I can only fix so many things. And I think that's what I hope is the community that's being built with the pantry, is that our volunteers are working one-on-one and seeing these same people all the time, which is a whole other complex issue, but they're building a community, they're getting to know their neighbors, and I feel like that's a really important piece. That's something very positive that I think comes out of it. So sharing of each other. Yeah, I think that for me, it is about vulnerability, of just sort of opening up and expressing that. First, to like be aware of it myself, and to just recognize it I'm like holding on so tightly to whatever it is. If it's, you know, if I'm just like wanting attention from someone, or whatever the case may be. And I think it really is helpful just to talk about it. Whoever the person that it's relating to, if it is relating to an actual person, for me it's just being honest and vulnerable, which is hard for me because I want to be right all the time, and I'm not, and that sucks a little bit, and I don't like that. So yeah, I think the first thing for me is just like recognizing it for myself, which is probably the hardest thing, just recognizing that I'm holding on so tightly to something. Yeah. Yeah.
I really appreciate your talk, and I just want to sort of echo that. I really noticed that feeling of scarcity come up around public transportation, and I kept myself like standing there with a whole bunch of people who are waiting for the bus, and you know, trying to gauge like where exactly to stop, so literally right now I position myself so that I would be closest to where the door will be. You know, how do I sort of angle, like it's stressfully to like get a seat, you know, and just all of those things, and just noticing, you know, sometimes I just cannot even control myself with it, and other times I can. I mean, you just sort of sit there and practice with it, like, okay, all right, don't panic. You know, you just feel the feeling of you know, discomfort and except I'm trying to move into ease, but I think then, you know, it also makes me recognize the times when it is easy and there's, you know, maybe nobody waiting, or maybe the door stops right in front of where I happen to be, and then you notice that feeling of ease of like, oh, okay, I'm gonna get on, and oh look, there's a seat, and
yes, I can relate to that.
A lot of scarcity and abundance in daily life.
I think it's good to talk about this. I think in our society, consumerist, capitalist, whatever, there's so much of a training to see see things in terms of scarcity, and there is real scarcity, there is real need, and so what you were saying about community, when we start to see in terms of community, that actually, from another angle, there is community. We're all in the community, all of us, and how do we start to act from that rather than the fear of not having enough? And you know, that's the problem of the whole world, and then there's the problem that we face day to day also. So just to recognize that dynamic, recognize what we're talking about, share how it feels to us, I think this is helpful, so I appreciate very much you bringing that up. It's not that we can fix it or solve it easily, but just to, you said, you talked about vulnerability to recognize that it's painful, and that we are vulnerable to feeling and sketching, to feeling like there's not enough, or feeling like, to feel the pain of there's not enough for everyone, whatever. And then also there's this reality which I feel like our Zazen practice kind of soaks into us, that we are connected, that we are community and multiple communities. We can see it that way. Yes.
I'm really fascinated by the example of waiting for the bus and hoping that you're going to get to be the first one on the bus when there's 20 people waiting. And I ride the bus a lot, and I'm very subject to that. And I find that to control that, I move way back and make sure that I'm not the first one on, because I don't like that feeling of wanting to be the first one on. And I think the thing about that example that I think is so wonderful is the contrast between that and the fact that presently there are 65 million people in the world who are refugees and are migrants and are homeless. The contrast between those two facts is so profound. The idea of 65 million refugees just fills me with dismay. I don't know what to do with it. And I think, and here I am hoping I'll get to be the first one on the bus. This is where we are somehow. I just don't know what else to say about this. It's not even just the 65 million refugees, it's that we're now going to spend another $1 trillion enhancing our nuclear arsenal. We're going to, and we're all worried about what's happening to our stocks now that Britain has decided to leave the EU. Everything feels disorganized, and worrisome. So, I feel that I think there's a movement afoot that is illustrated by ancient dragon Zen and Tim DeChristopher, and Josh Fox, and people who are out there saying what the Karen?
Katie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Katie had just explained. And I don't have much hope that this movement is going to be able to solve the problem of 65 million refugees. But, I mean, there's other people involved in it. Sean Brown, who just spent 4 months as a prison guard after spending 2 years in a prison in Iran.
And there was a report on that at Democracy Now this morning. So and you can see that at democracynow.org.
These things are happening with people like that, and the other side of it is, well, as one person explained, when you vote your fears, like you're going to vote for a certain person because you're afraid that somebody else will get it if you don't, your fears come to pass anyway. And as you can see, I'm not very well organized about this. I don't know what to think about it all.
May I add?
Oh, please do. I'm stumping.
Yeah, no, I think, but I appreciate you bringing all this up. I talked about this a little bit yesterday. I don't know what. But, the world is in this great place of crisis and uncertainty, and there are all kinds of revolutions. And one fellow yesterday pointed out that there are good things happening too. There, peace broke out in Colombia, the country of Colombia, this week. There was a peace treaty signed after 50 years of warfare between the rebels and the government. So lots of things are happening that are not reported mostly in the mainstream corporate media. So the whole world is in turmoil, and Britain leaving the EU. It's just, this is a time of great upheaval. And what Katie talked about community is really important. We actually are a community of beings. I think one of the folks you talked about said something about that very deep, that this is who we are, really. And at the same time, yes, all the refugees from wars in the Middle East, from climate, from people who are being deported. People, politicians wanting to build walls to keep people out. And, we're all in this together, really. There are all kinds of things happening, including positive things. And for us to be this little community trying to talk about this and recognize this and be vulnerable and not know what to do exactly, except that we can talk about it and we can see positive possibilities and recognize the, not be afraid to acknowledge the fear and be willing to speak of the difficulties of injustice and racism and all the things going on. Yes, Isha.
I wanted to add something too, that there is, it can be very overwhelming to think about those massive problems in the world, and yet they are, maybe less than 6 degrees of separation away from any one of us. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is something that practice can bring to all of these situations. It's just the willingness and awareness to kind of wake up in any situation. I one of the things that I'm always struck by whenever there is a mass shooting, and I'm sorry to have to say whenever there's a mass shooting, but the stories that come out about individuals' actions that were beneficial in that horrible situition. I think there was a professor at Virginia Tech who blocked the door so that 30 students in his classroom could jump out the window and escape. And then there was someone in Aurora who shielded someone with their body and then they died and the person under that have lived, and then there was a story from Orlando of a man who is now alive and survived this because his boyfriend stood in front of him and took the bullet and passed away. And I always think about, you know, what would inspire someone to do that in that situation? And you know, what are the chances? They always say that, you know, you never know how you're going to respond in a given situation. And I think to myself, well, you know, I really would like to have that unselfish impulse and help, but, you know, what are the chances if I can't even give up my seat on the bus? but I feel like, you know, that is maybe, hopefully, a fruit of practice one day. That one day, you know, maybe an unselfish impulse will arise in me on its own, and the way that it does for people. But I don't mean to make it more than that. But I feel like practice is a way of helping us cultivate, you know, that larger awareness that we are part of something bigger, and the, you know, maybe presence of mind in whatever situation we're in to be able to recognize that and try to do something.
And I appreciate Katie's talk a lot because she talked about this in terms of her own personal context and what she kept saying right in front of her. So we all can respond to what's right in front of us and try and be helpful and recognize the community and keep doing it. So, yeah, this is an ongoing discussion, obviously. Thank you, Kate. Thank you. We'll close with the four Bodhisattva vows, which are the next to last page of the chapter.
Means are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize.